walls. Trust me, these guys will eat you, your mother, and your bike and ask for seconds. Megiddo nods firmly. I continue to frown while Amelia keeps her arms crossed in support of me. Richard rolls his eyes before he finally sighs. So why don't we have John try to talk to them then? Ali can translate, right? It isn't that easy, of course. As much as I think we should try talking to them, going in dumb is stupid. We plot and plan for half an hour before I finally find myself walking down the hill with Ali floating alongside and grumbling. I understand his reluctance. I'm not entirely happy about the idea either, but since I'm one of the ones protesting genocide, we get the chance to establish peaceful communication. "Hello, the settlement!" I shout. Thanks to Ali, my words come out as a weird, clicking, grunting noise. Not that I needed to say anything to get their attention. A large number have already started clambering onto the walls, staring at me while wielding crude melee weapons. I shake my head, trying to imagine how anyone could be scared of a bunch of low-level monsters like these, even if they are sentient. They say nothing, but since they see me, I figure the next step is theirs. Keeping my hands to the side, I walk forward and stop when I get the message. Dungeon located. Warning. The current dungeon has not been categorized at this time due to system limitations. All XP rewards are doubled. Successful completion of the dungeon by a system-registered individual will generate additional rewards. My nose can't help but wrinkle as an errant gust brings the smell of unwashed bodies tinged with lemon, rotting garbage, and feces to me. Okay. Step one in ongoing relations, teaching these guys about soap and water. Boyo, Ali says worriedly, and my minimap flashes. I look up and blink as what were a few gray dots have become a flood. How the... I never finished the thought because at an unspoken command, the goblins open fire, launching a barrage of loud gunpowder slugs and arrows at me. As their attack arcs toward me, they splinter on an invisible barrier that flashes bright white. I snarl, dropping to a knee as I call forth a tower shield from my inventory. I drop it in front of my body as I channel a lightning strike spell in my free hand. Aiden's single-use, short-lived spell, the Guardian's Embrace, will protect against anything, short of a dragon's breath, but it only lasts a few seconds once activated. It's his most powerful protective spell, but it costs a ton of mana, which is why he doesn't use it often. Even as the spell fades, I see gray dots rushing toward me, goblins dropping over the wall in a wave. I ignore them, sticking my hand far enough around the shield to direct my spell at the ranged attackers. Lightning escapes my hand, its sudden appearance leaving behind the familiar pungent, almost chlorine smell of ozone. A blink of an eye, and the lightning smashes into a goblin on the wall. I continue to channel the spell, sweeping the wall and watching the lightning dance from body to body. As corpses fall, I cut off the spell and stand to meet the charging warriors. Now that they're actually trying to kill me, I'm done dithering about the morality of this. Behind the warriors, the gate is opened and more goblins flood out, their 4-foot-tall bodies spilling out as they try to close on me. As the first goblin gets within a few feet of me, they fall back, small holes appearing in their bodies, accompanied by the hiss of fast-moving pellets. Standing to my side, firing in a classic two-handed pose, Amelia guns down the attackers with her modified gauze pistol. Even as fast as she can shoot, the goblins make it to me, the first launching itself at my shield to pull it aside for his friends. As the monster reaches the peak of his jump, I pull the shield back into my inventory and let the goblin meet my fist. A sickening snap of its neck accompanies the body flying backward into its compatriots before I countercharge, calling forth my sword. I find myself grinning, killing the very creatures I was attempting to speak with. Truth be told, I'm glad they decided not to talk to me. This is so much simpler. Kill or be killed. I dance through the monsters, blade appearing and disappearing as swords, pistols, maces, and axes flash around me. I'm no legendary swordsman, no impossible anime character, so I get cut, stabbed, and shot, each blow sapping just a little of my health. Sadly, it's really hard to stack regeneration effects on an individual. Mostly, you can get away with a spell and a potion, or if you're really good, 2 spells. Of course, I've also got my skill, which helps as the creatures keep coming and coming. As I spin a goblin around by its arm, using it to clear some space before tossing him into his friends, I spot Amelia. Unlike me, she's staying still in a single position, a sword in her offhand. She continues to shoot and stab her enemies while a series of five glowing octagons swoop around her, blocking attacks with impunity. Her face is fixed with a look of grim determination as she fights, moving only when the bodies that pile up around her feet get too deep. Even with her skill, attacks are sneaking in and she bleeds from a dozen different wounds. It won't be long before she goes down, just like me. For once, my little spirit friend seems to be getting his hands dirty. No nasty spells or just floating in front of monsters incorporeal. He's swooping in and out, doling out Superman punches before swooping away. While he stays out of the majority of the fight, he still sports a bruise and a cut along one leg that bleeds blue light. As good as we are, as high level as we are, the fact that we're literally getting swarmed is beginning to tell. I slice apart a goblin who's latched onto my leg and backhand another trying to jump onto me, even as a third stabs into my collarbone with its dagger and hangs off my body while another drops a mace onto my foot. I snarl, spinning in a circle and loosing a blade strike that buys me a few moments, the blue cut of power ripping through goblins. A few seconds to hear the screams and shouts from the other side of the field as the cavalry finally arrives. The puppies and Makito smash into the flank of the horde, their attacks ripping a giant hole into the swarm and relieving the pressure on us. Behind them, Richard fires his shotgun in pellet form, raking the archers and riflemen to keep their heads down. Aiden finishes casting a spell, and the earth beneath the wall shifts, heaving and rippling in a mini earthquake. The wall tears apart, its foundations turn to mud. I watch as he stands there, headphones on to drown out the noise, his face pained even as he begins casting another spell. Reluctant or not, Aiden is doing his job. Above, Aurel swoops in to aid us, blades of wind slicing ahead of it as it banks.
"About damn time!"
Ali shouts as he floats, finally letting go of the goblin he hoisted into the air and dropping the monster onto its friends. Freed for a moment to focus, I raise my hand and channel lightning, playing it across the screaming goblins. One after another, they fall, twitching. Then I'm running to help Amelia, hoping I'm not too late. The pile of goblin bodies that mark where she fell erupts as I close in on it, reformed shields shoving aside goblins. I breathe a sigh of relief, casting a quick healing spell on her as I absently cut another monster apart. Surprisingly, she isn't as badly injured as I thought she would be after seeing her go down. As the horde flees back into their settlement, broken by the sudden attack on their flanks, I pant in relief, stamina quickly recovering. At least 50 bodies lie on the field before me, even more fleeing back, and untold numbers hidden underneath the collapsed walls. The puppies rush through the rout, biting and tearing apart goblins with savage ease. As the creatures reach the wall, Makito and the puppies pull back, returning to where Richard and Aiden eye the wall, joined soon by Amelia and me.
"I thought you said there was around 20,
Aiden points out, pulling his headphones off his ears to hear my reply.
"That's all we saw."
"What the hell, Ali?"
I look at the spirit, who blinks.
"What? We saw 20, so of course there are about 400 goblins."
At our incredulous expressions, Ali blinks.
"My bad. I forgot you guys don't know that one. It's like your cockroaches. See a single cockroach, there's about another 20 hidden. Goblins live underground mostly, so there's always a lot more underneath."
"And what, the most dangerous goblins live at the bottom?"
Amelia says incredulously.
"Don't be stupid. Goblins like fresh air, just like we do. The chief and his guards live on the surface, the others beneath,"
Ali replies.
400.
Even Makito looks a bit daunted by that number. I can't help but agree with her. Looking at the carnage around us, as blood cools and adrenaline leaves, a part of me feels sick. Blood, entrails, and limbs lay scattered all around, the fallen already rotting. A part of me wonders what kind of loot we could even get from this.
"Richard, you said there were about 4 or so that Aurel saw a week ago?"
I ask, and he nods. I can see everyone doing the math. 4 goblins equals about 80 monsters.
That's another 300 that appeared in a week. If left unchecked, these 400 could become a few thousand in another week. No wonder they call them a horde.
We started this. We need to finish it.
Richard's voice grows firm as he gestures toward the settlement.
10 minutes. We loot what we can, then we finish this.
I draw in a deep breath, pushing aside my doubts and my nausea.
He's right.
There's a job to finish, and whatever I feel, whatever I think, we need to finish it before the goblins truly become a threat. I reach for that ocean of anger, letting it rise and bathe me in its cleansing clarity. I bend down, touch the nearest goblin, and pull up its loot. I flinch slightly as I stare at the ear that hangs in my hand.
Yeah. Fuck you too, system. Fuck you too.
Dark warrens with ceilings barely 5 feet high at times, filled with smoke and screams. Flashes of pain as goblins drop from ceilings or crawl from unseen holes. Fire, thrown in close confines, forcing us to switch to gas masks and helmets. Occasionally, very powerful wind spells by Aiden. Goblins charging us again and again, until even Amelia is out of pellets and we're all fighting hand to hand, death wherever we go. Monsters clambering over each other, swarming Makito and bringing her down by the sheer weight of bodies to stab at her again and again. The pain which I share with her during the attack as Richard punches, kicks, and smashes goblins with his rifle, Shadow by his side. Aiden, head set on to drown out the screams and cries, vomiting in the corner, none of us daring to ask if it's mana exhaustion or something else. A goblin mother, clutching her child as an impromptu shield, using my moment's hesitation to plunge her blade into my stomach. Richard forced to call Max back from eating a goblin's body. Flashes of pain and death and brutality, and finally, finally, we're done. One last look, then I give the command, none of the others wanting to do it. Cobbled together and real explosives we placed next to magically weakened supports throughout the dungeon go off. At first, nothing happens beyond a small dust cloud and a tremor. Both grow as the ground collapses beneath the dungeon, the burrows burying the corpses and our memories. When we leave, the only sign of the dungeon is a deep depression and a few scattered bodies for the ravens and other scavengers. No one says anything, faces drawn and haggard as we walk away, blood dripping from our armor. Gods, I hate this damn system some days.
Chapter 11. Minion? My voice drips with scorn when I walk into the city council's offices.
After yesterday's dungeon and today's hunt, I figured it was about time I updated the council's map with my latest findings. I've been popping in every once in a while, letting them know of new monsters, new hazards, and the like. Most of the time, it's Miranda or one of the many other workers in here. This time, it's Minion.
Mr. Lee?
Eric's lips thin, and a little part of me grins. Gods, but I really want to punch that face. Just seeing it makes my fist itchy.
What is your business today?
Map update. I walk over to the table and reach for some paper. At Minion's raised hands, I blink, then I remember a moment before the screen appears. Eric Roth would like to share map data with you, yes or no? I really, really dislike Minion. Perhaps mostly because he's just so damn efficient at being a bureaucrat. I agree and watch as he blinks, staring into space from my viewpoint. It only takes him a few moments before he nods, swinging his hand up to dismiss the screen.
This goblin dungeon, it's gone, he says.
As gone as we can make it. Best to have someone swing by for the next little while, check it out, at least once every few days. He nods, making a note in the air.
Then we are done. Unless there is something else?
No. I turn away, then stop, turning back.
Why?
Why what, Mr. Lee?
Minion's voice is cool as he stares at me.
You know what, I growl.
And if I do not answer, you'll beat it out of me? That's the thing with you people, isn't it? It's all violence and anger, rage and destruction. You stomp through the city acting like you own it, and maybe you do, but the rest of us have to pick up after you and your kind. You adventurers. You're just waiting for a chance to pick on us, push us around. Damn you all, Minions says, his voice trembling. Catching himself at the end, he draws a deep breath. I stare at the small man shouting at me, and I blink as it sinks in. Adventurers? You hate the Yerrick and me because we're adventurers? You may leave, Mr. Lee, Minions says. Wait a second. You hate me because I fight to survive? To keep all of us alive? My voice rising, I stare at the man. Very well. Eric turns and walks to the other office door. He shuts it behind him, leaving me staring at him. I could have stopped him, of course, but then I'd just be using violence to get my way. I shake my head, staring at the door. Yeesh. Some people. Quiet tonight, I murmur, staring around the nugget as I enter. Ali nods and flits over to our usual table. We all needed a break after the goblin dungeon, so the group split apart to do their own thing after we came back. Richard, as far as I could tell, was in and around town, doing meetings and ladies in equal amounts. Aiden was back to his books, training and teaching, and I have a feeling he might not come out with us again. Amelia has her duties, and the stink eye I get from Veer tells me he doesn't approve of her jaunt with us. Or maybe it's just that he doesn't approve of me. Makito, out at our shoddy training grounds, works with hunters and others who want to improve their melee skills. That leaves me as the only one dumb enough to go out hunting still. What can I say? There's a peace to fighting creatures that don't talk or scream or have babies. Of course, that time alone also gives me a chance to check out the fort and speak with the Hakarta. It's my first visit with them since I've made the deal. We both have better things to do, I'm sure, and it's not as if I can gather that much more detail in only a few months. Our talk was both interesting and profitable, though I make note of what they're asking. Numbers, classes, defenses, and Roxley's whereabouts all are prominent in the questioning, but we touch on other matters too, like the number of buildings and the dungeons that have appeared and the food situation. I get the feeling that whatever they're hunting for or need is hidden in the mess of questions they ask. I'm still not sure if keeping secret the fact that they've been asking about us is a good idea, but I don't entirely trust the council not to go off their rockers with this information. We're so busy doing our thing, I'm not entirely sure there's anything the council could even do if they did know. Resting against the chair, I nod in gratitude to the waitress who drops off the beer and the appetizers. After all the credits and loot I've picked up, my latest visit to the shop came with some significant purchases. A thought is all that's required to pull up my character sheet so I can survey my growth. Status screen. Name, John Lee. Class, Eritrean Honor Guard. Race, human, male. Level, 26. Titles, Monster's Bane, Redeemer of the Dead. Health, 1,190. Stamina, 1,190. Mana, 930. Mana regeneration, 65 per minute. Attributes. Strength, 72. Agility, 114. Constitution, 119. Perception, 45. Intelligence, 93. Willpower, 100. Charisma, 16. Luck, 25. Class skills. Mana Blade, 1. Blade Strike, 2. Thousand Steps, 1. Altered Space, 2. 2R1, 1. The Body's Resolve, 1. Greater Detection, 1. Instantaneous Inventory, 1. Cleave, 1. Frenzy, 1. Combat Spells. Improved Minor Healing, 2. Greater Regeneration. Improved Mana Dart, 4. Enhanced Lightning Strike. Fireball. Polar Zone. I'm still disappointed that there wasn't any particular bonus for crossing 100 in any attribute. I'd considered it a possibility, and even though I had checked with Ali earlier, it felt as though it should be significant somehow. However, since the numbers themselves are rough approximations of the changes in my body, it does make sense that there's no benefit. For that matter, I'm being rather human-centric. There's no particular reason why it had to be 100. Hey, Ali, does the council have special numbers?
I ask the spirit, who's staring at a screen.
What, like the number 8 or 10?
At my nod, he shrugs.
Depends on the race. The Trinar really like prime numbers. The Joxen revere the number 14. There's the Priximars, giant rolling spheres, who find pi extremely important.
I nod in thanks before returning to my screen. Interesting, but irrelevant. Looking over my status screen, I smile slightly at how much better it looks now. I've adjusted the screen to display just my combat spells, since those are the ones I'm mostly concerned with. Utility spells like Tinder, Light Orb, Purify Water, Cleanse, and the like just aren't that interesting, even if they are useful for everyday life. They're so useful that Aiden now spends a good 2/3 of his class time teaching those spells to others. After all, not everyone needs to throw a fireball, but everyone needs to do laundry and dishes. Fireball is my new mass monster killer, and follows along the line of the old Dungeons and Dragons spell, a small flaming orb that shoots forward before sending a sphere of heat and flame outward. Polar Zone drops the temperature in a targeted location and slows monsters down. Size of location and temperature drop are dependent upon mana and how big I make it. The bigger the area, the less of a drop. Of course, the minimum area I can target is about 10 feet wide. It's a pretty good crowd control spell and does some minor damage, but mostly it's my anti-forest fire spell. Throwing around fireballs in a dry forest is a bad, bad idea. It's also why I still prefer lightning strike. One thing I'm holding off on is purchasing more direct protection spells and skills, since at level 30, I'll be able to access Soul Shield, my class shield skill. I've fast come to realize that you're constantly trading off between acquiring passive skills, which are powerful but reduce your regeneration rates, with active skills and spells that require mana to operate. It's why even mages wear armor in this world. After all, other than credits, it costs nothing to purchase nano-woven armor that could stop a normal sword stab. Of course, theoretically, I could just spend the credits and buy an active protection spell or skill. The trade-off of purchasing something now is that if I could earn it later on, I'd be wasting credits now that could be spent on upgrading my equipment. As it stands, I've begun to realize that having both the system inventory and altered space abilities is quite broken. Altered space lets me ignore a whole series of knowledge areas that most professional adventurers like the Yerrick have to learn. For most adventurers, picking up the basics of monster lore and anatomy is very important, along with the basic skills in skinning and harvesting. Most monster corpses have only a few parts that the alchemists and armorers want. Knowing what they are is an important secondary source of credits, and can add anywhere from 10 to 15% to your day's earnings. Harvesting the bodies for parts with a skill lets you place them in your inventory, so most adventurers dedicate time or money to learning those skills. I just ignore the problem by tossing entire bodies into my altered space and letting the butchering yard deal with it. In addition, because I've got a secondary and significantly larger form of storage, I don't have to husband in my inventory space. Working with the Yerrick, I realize that many of them carry numerous other pieces of equipment with them on a typical adventure. These range from extra sets of clothing, spare armor, weapons and potions to more mundane equipment like ropes, living accommodations, food, water, and light sources. Then you get the specialized toys, directional explosives, mines, portable shield barriers, and drones for scouting, to name just a few. All of those things take up a ton of space, but make dungeon delves and combat safer. Of course, the more you carry in inventory, the less space you have for loot. Since I don't have to worry about space, I've been devoting surplus credits to adding to my normal loadout in the hopes of giving myself more options in the future. I might never need a dozen claymores and a half dozen bounding mines or over 50 grenades in various forms, but if I ever do, at least I've got them. I've been tempted repeatedly in the last few weeks to add more points into my mana imbue, increasing the damage output of my sword. Fighting at range is a nice idea, but between dungeons, where visibility is about 5 meters at most, and monsters that need multiple shots to kill, I found myself in close combat more often than not. Compared to the Yerrick, I'm just not hitting hard enough. On the other hand, my mana regeneration is already suffering from my numerous passive skills, and I'm really curious to see what 1,000 blades is like in combat. After all, if I can hit 12 times rather than once,
A minor increase in damage will definitely be negated. My thoughts about my build, and damn Jason for making me think of it in that way, is interrupted as Lana drops into a seat next to me, snagging a chicken wing as she does so.
Hey, beautiful, Ali greets her. You're looking tired.
I am. Lana flashes him a smile that washes away her exhaustion for a brief moment. John? Lana, you okay? I look around once more, noting again that only a few tables are full.
Just been a long day.
Lana shakes her head, worry lines appearing between her eyebrows again.
Finding someone to run this place after the last manager quit has been a pain.
Ah, I nod slowly. That explains her absence in the evenings for the last week and her constant presence here. Quiet today. There's something going on that I missed?
Tons, Ali quips while we both ignore him.
The cellar reopened today. They've got lower prices and a human-only policy,
Lana says tiredly, looking around the nugget.
A lot of the regulars decided to check it out.
Who bought it? I say.
Bill.
Lana's voice rises slightly at the mention of his name.
He picked up the motel next to it at the same time and put the same policies in place. I hear there's work being done on the restaurant that was located in the motel, too.
Huh. I look around the nugget again, wondering if the lowered volume will affect the viability of the business. I frown, trying to recall Lana's ramblings about the business before I quickly realize that I don't have the details to make an educated assessment.
I guess that's what's stressing you out?
Not really. He's still buying most of his alcohol from the brewery, so either way we win. And maybe this way the newcomers will start coming by more,
Lana adds. I nod. The Yerrick, mostly led by Capstan, started showing up at the Nugget in the last few weeks, but the Trinar continued to stay to themselves, preferring to live, sleep, and relax in their quarters in Roxley's building. Veer's about the only Trinar we see in the Nugget, and his obsidian skin and white hair always get more than a few stares. Looking at the plates before me, Lana says,
Are you okay?
Hmm? I answer as I chew on a mouthful of wontons.
There are only four plates here. That's about half of what you normally eat.
Lana points. I look at the food before shrugging. Huh. Funny story about that.
I could use a laugh,
Lana replies.
Boyo here gets hangry. The Yerrick started feeding him every few hours, and he stopped being as bitchy,
Ali cuts in before I can say anything. I growl at the spirit, who just shoots me a wide smile.
Oh,
Lana says, her eyes twinkling as she tries not to laugh. Yeah, yeah. So maybe part of my anger control issues are due to low blood sugar. Real funny.
Hey, sis,
Richard bends down to give the top of Lana's head a quick kiss. She glares and swipes at him tiredly while he chuckles, taking a seat. Richard's latest girl flashes us a quick smile, dropping into his seat as well. Both of them have that weird, too clean look of someone who just got hit with a cleanse spell. Useful spell, as I said, but it's particularly harsh on clothing and creates this weird dichotomy where the clothing itself looks factory fresh, but any wear then shows through in stark contrast.
Dick, Paddy?
Ali says, and I nod in welcome to both newcomers.
The cellar's busy. I saw a pair of Amelia's people standing nearby keeping an eye on the crowd. Rumor has it that they don't intend to close at all,
Richard says without preamble, waving to the waitress and holding up a pair of fingers.
How did Fred take it?
Lana says.
Kicked up a fuss at the meeting today. Of course, Bill's just ignoring him so far. Fred even mentioned maybe taking it up with Roxley.
Richard shakes his head. Fred must be at his wit's end if he's asking for Roxley's help, the alien interloper, as Fred likes to call him.
Why is the cellar being open all hours a problem? Patty asks, her brow furrowed.
I smile at Richard's latest girl, who has managed to last 3 days so far. That's pretty surprising. Of course, the way Richard is eyeing the waitress as she bends over to serve him, Patty's days might be numbered. At this point, if a woman in town doesn't know about Richard's womanizing, she's either catatonic or completely socially inept.
Because Fred is mayor no fun and wants us back to 10 o'clock closings, Richard says.
It's more complicated than that,
Lana corrects, holding up a finger.
We've always had a problem with alcoholism. While a lot of the active alcoholics didn't make it, quite a few of those who were on the wagon have relapsed.
Limiting the hours the Nugget was open helped reduce the temptation and times they could drink, which gave us potential windows to help, well, sober them up.
If they die off, isn't that better for us?
Patty asks, brown eyes glittering.
Cold, Ali grins. I like you.
Richard looks startled as she says that. He opens his mouth, then shuts it, then tries again.
It's... well, shouldn't we try to help them?
Why?
Patty shakes her head.
They're just a drain on our resources. We don't have the space for them, you know?
But they're humans, like us. We can't just discard them to the wayside, Richard protests.
We're not discarding them. We're letting them choose, Patty points out. I didn't put the bottle in their hands. They did. If they choose, isn't that better for us?
If they aren't useful now, we should just let them die if they want to, Lana states. And when Patty turns to her and nods, Lana huffs out a breath.
You know, a lot of people have said that.
A lot. Yeah, see? We should do that, Patty reiterates.
Except if everyone did that, most of us would be dead, Lana points out. John saved us when we couldn't fight off a troll. Roxley put his guards into place to save the city when we couldn't fight off the spawns. Richard, Jim, John, and the rest, they've all taken the hunters out again and again to level them. Part of being human is that we all stumble sometimes. We all need help sometimes.
The last is said while Lana faces me, her violet eyes somber.
When is enough? When do we say that's it?
Patty says, hand clenching her pint glass.
When do the rest of us get to live our lives and stop sacrificing for the useless? We're dying out there. We go out, we kill the monsters, and we bring back the food, and the council tells us it's not enough. Never enough. And then we go out again, and we die because we're too damn tired or under-resourced. When do we get to stop?
Well, that is the question, isn't it?
Lana murmurs, seemingly unaffected by the anger Patty shows. Then again, she's dealt with me for months now. A little leaked frustration is small potatoes.
Who are you with? I'm in Wigmore's group. That's how I met Richard.
Taking the opening, Lana adroitly steers the conversation to something a little less controversial, getting Patty to talk about how she and Richard met. I tune it out, focusing on my meal and catch a glimpse of Richard staring at Patty with a bit of a shocked expression. A large, stocky man trumbles in.
Pearson!
Both redheads look up and he points straight at Richard. Behind him, a young lady scrambles around the enraged man, calling for him to calm down. Richard looks confused, his gaze flicking to the girl, then back to the man.
You slept with my wife?
The man stomps over, shoving a table aside and sending it crashing to the floor. Richard stands up quickly, setting himself for a fight.
No!
Lana snaps, her Red Queen aura snapping on. Everyone freezes, dread kicking them in the stomach while she adds, Take it outside. Both of you. Richard blanches at her words, casting an imploring gaze at his sister. She snaps at him.
Now!
Richard moves, staying outside of the man's reach, and when he's halfway to the door, Lana snaps off the aura. The man has already turned, his feet happy to obey the instruction of, Get away from the scary woman. As Richard reaches the door, he's followed by one last instruction from his sister.
No pets!
Not helping him? I say to Lana while Ali heads off to enjoy the show, already calling out for bets on the winner.
I warned him this might happen. He's a big boy. The pain won't last long, Lana says, shaking her head.
Idiot.
You're not worried he's going to beat up the husband?
Lana shakes her head.
He might be an idiot, but he's got a good heart. He'll take his beating.
I chuckle softly, and then remembering Patty, I shoot her a look. She snorts, shrugging.
Before my time.
Right, I add, voice doubtful. She doesn't bother explaining herself, and after a moment, I let it go. None of my business, after all. The table falls into an awkward silence, punctuated by shouts and cheers from outside as the beating draws a crowd. Richard finally comes back, sporting a deep shiner and holding his side.
She told me he was dead.
Patty just shakes her head at him, though there's a ghost of a smile on her face. Lana, on the other hand, props her head on a hand while asking, How did he find out?
So, about that.
Richard clears his nose, blowing clotted blood into a tissue.
Congratulations. You're going to be an aunt.
Didn't you fix that?
Lana almost shouts, and he winces.
I thought so. I think the beast's vitality actually overrode the system fix. I guess going for the cheapest option might not have been the smartest thing, Richard says sheepishly.
What are you going to do about it?
Lana's voice is calmer, though colder. Patty's lips are thin and tight, the smile gone as she waits for Richard to answer.
I don't think I'm wanted, you know? She's keeping it, but... yeah.
So you're going to leave her, them, alone?
Patty asks, her voice cold. Richard looks away from his sister and pales even further.
No. Yes. They don't want me, I think. I...
Richard draws a deeper-than-normal breath, wincing.
I just let myself get beaten, damn it. Let me, you know, process this. Figure it out.
Patty's eyes flash and she gets up.
Well, when you figure it out, don't bother calling me.
Richard opens his mouth to protest, then shuts it with a clack. Ali, who has finally returned, catches the last couple of sentences before Patty strides out.
I really like her. Can we keep her?
Chapter 12.
Aiden!
I scream as I grab the stinger coming at my face and use it to throw the gray, eight-legged bastardization of a scorpion at its friends. Three pairs of eyes and a mouth, with rows of needle-sharp teeth that take up the entire torso, help complete the horror of a monster. Mikito steps back, the Naginata glowing with red light as it cuts through the claw targeting her head. Her movement opens up a space for another of the creatures to scramble past, but the monster is blocked by Max as the husky teleports in close enough to tear off a leg. Aiden claps, and the ground ahead of us rises up, earth turned to mud that swamps monsters that attempt to push past it and then hardens. The entrance before us blocked off. We turn our concentrated attention on the remaining monsters. I snarl, severing a stinger that pins Bella to a wall before booting the monster away from the puppy. As the monster rises, I throw my mana darts into its face before following up with a blade strike that kills the creature. Together, Max, Shadow, and Richard finish off a third while Aiden freezes a monster for Mikito to kill. Fraxen, level 58, HP 980 of 980. As I dash over to tackle the last Fraxen, the impromptu wall cracks. I snap a command immediately.
Go! Ali, lead them out!
The group listens for once, fleeing for the exit as I dance back from a pincer strike and cast another group of mana darts into the monster's face. As it rears back, I channel a blade strike to rip off its legs, accidentally tearing down a part of the wall. Scrambling through a crack, one of the Fraxen gets stuck and chitters angrily. All the monsters on this side are either crippled or dead, so I run for the exit too. It doesn't take long to reach the entrance to the cavern where I slap down a pair of bounding mines. A short distance away, I chain together three of the modified claymores before adding the laser tripwire. I spin around, watching as the last of the wall breaks free and the monsters clamber over each other to get to us. Bastards. I take the time to cast Polar Zone to slow them down further to give my friends a little more of a head start. Preparations complete, I run down the passage, headed for the dungeon's entrance. Gods, I hope I've bought us enough time. I didn't. Thankfully, Aiden took the time to narrow the dungeon entrance before he ran for it. Made for an uncomfortable moment for me, but it was even harder for the Damfraxen to escape. We find ourselves regrouping a distance away, the monsters having decided to give up after circling the entrance for a bit.
Bella okay?
I ask. Richard nods grimly, running a hand over his dog. The wounds seem to have closed up pretty well, but he still spends some time looking her over carefully.
We nearly died, Aiden says, sounding half-panicked.
For a moment, I pity him. Second time out with me to a dungeon, and it's the second time we've run into something outside of our league.
Easy,
Mikito says, placing a hand on Aiden's arm. Aiden looks at it, then draws a deep breath, actually saying, Om, as he tries to center himself.
He's right, Richard adds, standing up slowly. Those things were tough.
Level 55 to 60, I clarify, and the startled looks from the group makes me smile grimly.
You can read levels?
Aiden says, pointing at me.
Yes,
I pause before looking at the others. We can't tackle that dungeon alone. We're going to need more help if we want to do it.
Can we smoke them out?
Mikito asks.
I contemplate the question.
Last time, we basically poisoned a group of Krillic shifters in their lair, choking them out with carbon dioxide and a lack of oxygen.
No idea. It's a thought.
I swallow to clear my throat once again. So, another dungeon? Aiden looks worried. I know one around here that's level 20. The Yarrick and I cleared it a few weeks ago. Should be ready for another group, I add.
The others nod slowly.
As good as the bonuses for checking and clearing new dungeons are, we still have to deal with the existing ones, too. Anyway, something a little easy would help settle Aiden's nerves. After receiving agreement from everyone, we head out while I get Ali to bookmark this location. We'll be back, one way or the other. You okay? I ask Aiden as he leans against a tree, breathing slowly and regularly. The others are seated in a loose circle watching the dungeon entrance, slowly relaxing after coming out of the dungeon. A level 20 dungeon with this group was a cakewalk, and we blasted through the location within a few hours. The only thing that slowed us down was the maze-like corridors that had changed in configuration since the last time I was there. Aiden looks up, pulling his headphones down as I repeat my question. He opens his mouth, glances to the side where the puppies are tearing happily into their lunch and our most recent nemesis, a creature that vaguely resembled a hippopotamus without its sunny disposition, and turns a little green again. Once more, Aiden shuts his eyes and forces himself to breathe.
I'll be fine. I just need a moment.
You sure? I ask, slightly concerned.
I can't understand him. Not really.
Aiden did well in the dungeon, and every time we've been attacked. But now, when things are quieter, he's panicking and looking like he's about to throw up.
Yes, I just need to find my center and stop looking at that.
He waves toward where the dogs are ripping into the body, tearing off chunks of flesh and gulping it down. The crunch of bones and the wet tearing noises of their meal ripple through the clearing, making Aiden flinch every time. He's the only one who seems disturbed by it, probably because the three of us are much more used to this scene. Okay then, I pause, considering. Mind if I ask a personal question?
Maybe. It depends on how personal,
Aiden says. Why are you out here? You've got a pretty good gig in the city, teaching and training. You might not earn as much as a hunter, but I can't see you being poor.
Don't want me here?
I shake my head. I'll take all the competent help I can get.
I need to level,
Aiden replies.
It's, well, I need it. Leveling is the only way to be safe in this world. I need more skills, more spells, all of it. Being weak in this world, you die.
Yeah, there's not much space for the weak. I look around us, at the corpse of the monster being torn to bits. You going to be okay doing this, then?
Yes.
Oh, I have to be. Aiden slowly straightens up, exhaling one last time.
How about you? Why do you do it?
I open my mouth, then shut it, lips twisting wryly. Well, I'm kind of stupid. I'm running back through the evening summer sunlight, breathing in clear, clean air filled with fallen pine needles and the remaining spring flowers. I enjoy the fresh air, especially after having just escaped the twisted, poisoned air of the land behind me. The world is changing, and so is our environment. The trees in that particular location have warped to become poisonous, releasing a nearly undetectable toxin that starts doing damage only after it hits a certain toxicity level. If it hadn't been for my class resistances and my greater-than-normal regeneration rates, I'd never have escaped. I've got the location mapped, and I'll need to come back at some point to work out how large and how dangerous a threat these new trees are. At the least, after escaping the trees, hunting was good. I even found a relatively newly spawned boss. I only needed to wade through a half dozen of its minions before I got my chance to chop off its twisted, bulbous legs, then carve its heart out. I know it sounds gruesome, but I couldn't figure out where its head was in the weird, knobby sphere that made up its body. Cutting bits and bobs off it didn't seem to actually kill it, so heart it was. Sometimes, mass violence is the only answer. Coming in from the wrong side of the river, I decide to dive in and swim across. I don't like the water, but considering it'll take me all of 3 strokes before I'm across, it's a lot better than running to the nearest bridge. One day, perhaps, I'll be able to bridge the distance with 1 solid jump. Running through the industrial lands that make up this part of the city, I can't help but note how the buildings have begun to come apart. Wood rots, plants grow between cracks, and roofing sags under the onslaught of untamed mana. Without being brought into the system, these buildings will eventually come apart at the seams, unless they get converted into something else, of course. First stop for today is the butchering yard, then the shop. By the time I reach Whitehorse, even at the slow jog I'm moving at, I'm nearly dry. Love these high-tech one-piece suits, even if this one needs replacing soon. Somehow, a wild boar had made its way into the wild and doubled in size with some truly nasty tusks. I hadn't even heard it coming till it was on me, which was surprising in itself. Either way, the armor took most of the damage, but would need fixing. A crowd around the butchering yard isn't unusual. The size of this crowd is, and I find myself slowing down, checking for potential problems. I find it in the haggard-looking form of Rachel and another member of the Brothers of the Wolf. Jim stands next to them, speaking softly, while the crowd mill around the trio.
Not your fault.
Reading Jim's lips from this distance is hard with the way the crowd keeps shifting, so I give up, instead threading my way through the group. My eyes narrow slightly as I note it's a mixture of First Nations civilians and hunters.
You should rest,
Jim murmurs, putting a hand on the shoulders of the pair. Rachel flinches away from his hand, and the young First Nation teenager's face is filled with tears but obstinate.
No, we have to go back. We have to help them,
Rachel cries, looking around desperately for help and latching on to me.
John, please, you have to help me, please.
I pause as the crowd parts. I step forward, looking between Rachel and Jim while the other teenager continues to shake.
Please!
Rachel rushes up to me and grabs my hand. I let her take it, staring at her as she blurts out,
I couldn't. They told me to run, but they were stuck. We've got to save them, please!
My eyes widen slightly and I look at Jim, who shakes his head ever so slightly. I draw a deep breath, looking at the distraught girl, then nod slowly. Okay. I'll go. Ali, map projection. When the map comes up, Ali shares it with Rachel, who bites her lip, staring at the map. She stares at it for so long that I have to clear my throat.
I don't know. I'll just show you,
Rachel blurts out.
No, you're not going, Rachel,
Jim says, his voice brooking no argument. He glares at me, but I ignore him, focusing on the other kid who has begun to stare at the map too.
Kid? Do you know where you were?
Maybe.
He raises a hand, then lowers it. If you tell me, I'll go. Alone, I urge him, holding out the carrot of rest. He presses a hand to the map, and I watch as a small blinking dot appears. I nod in thanks. Rachel grabs at my arm again.
I'm coming.
Her voice breathy and desperate. She digs her fingers into my arm.
No.
As she opens her mouth to protest, I cut her off. You'll just slow me down. She clamps her mouth shut, knowing that I can move faster than she can. Her goal complete, she deflates, tears refilling her eyes and running down her face.
Please save them.
I'll check out the spot, my voice soft. I make sure not to promise anything. Another woman comes up, grabs Rachel by her arm, and pulls on her. The tired young lady gives in, letting herself be led away. Jim looks at me. His eyes dark.
I'm coming. Unless you think I'll slow you down too.
Got a truck? I murmur, keeping my voice low to ensure Rachel can't hear. He nods, and I gesture for him to get moving. Jim's lined face tightens as he turns and leads me to a nearby red pickup. A pair of hunters peel off to join us. As he puts his hand on the door, he's stopped by a toddler who rushes his legs, hugging his body. He bends down, rubbing the child's head.
I'll be fine, Aya. I'll be fine. I gotta go.
She hugs his leg again, refusing to let go, and finally has to be pried off by a harried-looking youngster. I keep silent till we're out of the gates, following the map we've shared with Jim.
Your granddaughter?
Yes,
Jim answers tartly. I nod as he puts his foot to the accelerator, taking corners a little faster than I'd like. After a time, he says what we both know.
They're dead, you know.
I know. Do you have more details?
Jim falls silent, chewing on his thoughts.
Not much. They were sweeping the area, looking for boss monsters. It seems like they found one.
Levels, type, strength, I ask, and Jim shakes his head.
Joy.
Ali, how far can you range now? I ask my spirit, watching as we slowly, ever so slowly, close in on the dot.
About 5 kilometers from you in these mana densities. You want me to check it out when I can?
Ali asks. I just nod. It's better than nothing, and greater awareness should keep us safe enough while he's gone.
Can do, boyo, Ali says.
I close my eyes for a moment. There were 6 brothers before Rachel joined, so if one came home with her, we lost 5. And they were some of our most promising new hunters to come out from our training program. I bite my lip, forcing myself not to curse as we make our way through the forest and carefully hike up the mountain. Jim and his hunters are so damn slow. I could have run to the marker by now. I push the anger down, knowing it isn't worth it. It took us nearly 1.5 hours to drive out this far, and Rachel would have taken just as long, if not longer, to come back. Whatever happened, happened a long time ago, and rushing now would add nothing but 4 more bodies. Still, I can't help my impatience. I've released all my drones as well as Ali in the hopes of picking up more information, but unfortunately, the drone was smashed 1 hour after release. A massive bug launched itself from the treetop and landed on it, ripping fuselage and wings off before attempting to feast on my expensive piece of junk. Since Ali can only range a set distance from me, I'm stuck waiting as we hike the rest of the way in. I grit my teeth, and to stop myself from killing anyone, I pull another chocolate bar from my inventory and chew on it. The taste, the motions, the sugar rush all help a little. Jim flicks a glance to me, his lips tightening, but he says nothing as the group sneaks forward. I wonder if he's more annoyed that I'm better than his group is at sneaking or that I'm eating. One of the benefits of my subterfuge perk is that I'm quite practiced at these stealth skills.
Okay, boyo. I need you to keep calm when I report,
Ali states the moment he's back in range. I can see him flying back as fast as his little body will take him, even as we converse mentally. What? I feel the anger I've been repressing surge, and I have to fight it back by breathing slowly and deeply to regain control. Just tell me, please.
I found their bodies. They're all dead, and the monsters, well, they're doing what monsters do.
They're eating the corpses, I say out loud, alerting Jim to Ali's information.
Yes,
Ali sends to me, concern in his mental voice. I freeze in place, not saying a thing, not moving as I process this information. I can't move, because if I do, if I let my control go for even a second, I think I'll charge the monsters. I see Haynes Junction again. The bodies of the townsfolk, the children, torn apart, cooked and eaten. Bones and bodies, so many of them. I shudder, my body shaking with repressed rage. In, out. In, out. Slowly, so slowly, my rage comes under control. I force it down, apply rigid control on myself. So many years of learning to accept that all I can control is myself. What is, is. I can't make them live again. I can't save them. They're already dead. All I can do is kill their murderers and build a pyre from their bodies. Talk to me, Ali. Tell me what I'm facing. 4 Zedukt beasts left, including the Alpha. The brothers left 3 of the Zuds as corpses. Unfortunately, each of these monsters has high 40s, low 50s levels, and the Alpha is a mid-50 Alpha. The Yerrick or my old team, we could have taken all 4. I don't trust my chances with Jim and his friends, not in a straight fight. The Zuds are each around 30 feet long, clad in blue scales with an extremely long neck, a stub of a tail, and a horn that rises from its head.
The scales absorb energy beams, redirecting any electrical energy they receive to their horns, making the monsters nearly impervious to energy weaponry. Not a problem for Jim, since his team still sticks to slug throwers, but since I wield a beam rifle, I'll either have to stick to magic or get in close. No puppies to aid me this time. By the time Ollie is finished explaining what we're facing and describe the Zuds to Jim, he and his friends are looking a little worried.
Can we?
Jim asks. Not directly, I answer, thinking furiously. I pull up the map, looking for an answer, but find no convenient gullies, caves, or terrain features to aid us. Ollie?
Nothing. Usual assortment of spike elms, sticky pine, and some new bladed asp leaves, but nothing that'll kill the Zuds.
Ollie answers, knowing what I want. Jim looks grim for a moment before his gaze slips to his friends. At last, he shakes his head, and I see his friends relax. You guys should get going, I say.
You're not coming?
No. I've got a lesson to be teaching.
John, you can't be serious, Jim says gruffly. That's suicidal.
Maybe. Don't worry about it. I'm not one of your charges, and this? This is what I do, I say, a smile pulling on my face. Oh, yes. This is what I do. Jim hesitates, looking conflicted before he shakes his head finally.
No, I'm staying.
No, you're not. You've got a grandchild and others waiting on you. Go home. Take care of them. Do the right thing. The smart thing. Jim's face hardens, getting mulish until his friend puts a hand on his arm and whispers something. Since I don't speak Southern to Chani, I don't know what is said, but it's enough to make Jim relent.
Don't die,
he says. Not the plan, I point at his rifle. I do want to borrow that, though, and any ammunition you have. Ali stays silent for a few minutes after Jim and the group depart. Then he berates me.
Do we have to do this every goblin's vomit time? And what kind of insanity have you thought of this time? Going to call a dragon to eat him? Or maybe a troll?
No, I'm going to do this myself. I absently heft the weapon Jim has provided me. Nice little slug thrower, fully powered by a mana engine with armor-piercing rounds and a decent scope.
Ooh, you're going to stab them to death? Shoot them with your pea shooter?
No, I smile. Relax, I have a plan.
I really, really am growing to hate those words, Ollie says out loud, and I grin at the little spirit.
This is not a smart plan. This isn't even a particularly creative plan. It takes hours of setup, hours of back-breaking labor, most of which Ollie spends telling me how wasteful an activity all this is. I eventually threaten him with banishment to shut him up. Finally, I'm ready. I sneak up on the monsters, getting close enough that I can eyeball them from a distance.
Zidukt Beast, level 48, HP 2880 of 2880. Zidukt Beast Alpha, level 55, HP 3780 of 3780.
Get close enough to see them. Aim and fire, targeting the eyes, and hope to blind them. At the end of the day, the goal is to get their attention and make them chase me. Run, spin, and shoot when they get bored. Dodge the blasts of electricity and be grateful for the stupid lightning squirrels upping my resistance when I do get hit. Run, duck, dodge, and fight. Keep moving to the target location. Thankfully, it's not too far. And even more thankfully, unthinking aggression is something the system seems to favor in its monsters. X marks the spot, and I'm finally here with a 100-meter lead. Simple. X is a steep cliff, about 5 meters above a small forested clearing. The cliff's not high enough for it to hurt if they fell off the edge normally, but it's high enough for my purpose. I leap off the cliff, slam into the ground, and spin, calling forth my sword and a blade strike at the same time. The Zuds follow, getting ready to jump, the Alpha already charging up another shot. I'm not targeting them, though. I'm targeting the cliff face. Or more specifically, I'm targeting the remaining columns of stone and earth that hold up the cliff. I hit them, one after the other, with my blade strikes as the creatures get ready to jump, their weight and the weakened structures giving way to a mini landslide. That's when they get to learn about my second surprise underneath the ground of the clearing. I'd considered leaving the ground as an open pit, but I wasn't entirely sure the landslide would work. If it didn't,
At least if the pit was covered, they might still jump. As it stands, the monsters, the remains of the cliff, and the light covering I placed over the pit all crash into the deep, deep hole I've dug. I hate manual labor. I really do. I had to cut down a tree to make an improvised shovel just